Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. We have a really great show for you today, dealing with the notion of certainty and how we get stuck in our head with different kinds of thinking patterns that can be good for us or useful for us or destructive and unsupportive of what we're wanting to create in our lives. So today, you are listening to Mental Health Matters on KRUU 100.1 on your FM dial. Our shows are archived. Danielle, where are shows archived?
I believe there is a YouTube channel.
The Art and Counseling Center YouTube channel?
Mental Health Matters on YouTube.
Mental Health Matters. It's the Art and Counseling Center.
The Art and Counseling Center website. You can find them there, or do you want me to give them your email address too as well, Scott?
Yeah, why don't you do that and then look up the YouTube channel as well.
Okay. You can reach us at, you can email Dr. Terry at scott@ardentcenter.com. That's S-C-O-T-T. At ardentcenter.com. And I am going to look up this YouTube channel, Scott, so if Kyle wants to introduce himself while I do that.
Hello, my name is Kyle, and I am an undergraduate intern of Dr. Scott Terry. I've got my bachelor's in psychology. I'm going to be going to get my graduate degrees, and I like playing music, and I'm glad to be here.
And Kyle is all-around awesome dude.
Thanks.
And we got Danielle McWilliams on the line, who is soon to be a full-fledged real therapist.
Yeah.
And not an intern anymore.
While being a full-time mother.
Yes, my name is Danielle McWilliams. I am a graduate intern, and I'm planning to graduate in August. So hopefully that stays that way until then.
Okay. So on the track to finding ways to make a difference, and you're having a full load, and you're doing lots of work, which is really interesting.
Absolutely. And so for that YouTube channel, if you just, it is Mental Health Matters, I believe, on YouTube. Is that correct, Scott?
No, it's Art and Counseling Center on YouTube, and then there's a bunch of the radio shows on there. As well as some really interesting lectures, including a great performance from the Hope for Life concert, a division of the Mental Health Alliance here in town. And that was a great performance. And, you know, if people are looking for some back shows, they're also on KRUU. A bunch of the shows are archived there.
Right.
I'm actually, and it looks like, too, if you Google or, well, go to YouTube and then you type in Ardent Counseling Center, as I just did, you'll find everything there, lots of lectures by Dr. Terry as well. So
this show will be about how to get to our YouTube channel. We'll be doing this for the next 28 minutes.
Oh, God.
What's the show on? What's the topic?
The show is on certainty, and we've been anything but today. So let's talk about that. But let's talk about some other difficult thinking patterns. Danielle, you pulled up Daniel Amen's work, and he suggests that he found 9 types of different thinking patterns that don't work?
Yes, and I actually just lost them here as I was trying to Google the YouTube. So let me get those back up here.
All right. And then as you think about this, again, everything in this show and everything that we're trying to do is really about finding avenues that work for you. And so if you hear something that doesn't work for you, great. Then look at its information and go, now it's time to keep growing, because that's what it means to be human and alive. And if it does work for you and we're not correct for you, then fantastic as well. Then you're more certain about what does work for you. It's really finding an avenue over and over again of what works for you.
Right, because when you're a teenager or you're a parent, you have a coach or you're listening to someone, you're getting information, you can always put a screen up. Someone's talking to you, someone's talking at you, you can always put a screen up and filter out the things that don't work for you. And listen to the things that do work for you.
Yeah, and so it's just finding the avenues of a thinking pattern that does work for you. Because it's really interesting how much we get stuck in the details, what's outside ourselves. You know, oh, this person's doing that. Oh, my boss is doing this to me. Oh, the weather is bad. Whatever it is. And we need to keep coming back to, well, what? How is that we're thinking about the problem that's actually creating the problem itself? You know, if we're getting trapped in our own thinking, in our own head, that we have these presuppositions that, for instance, I was going to talk about this notion of certainty, that I had this discussion with somebody who wanted to have certainty in his life because he felt anxiety. And the way that some people deal with anxiety is they try to control the world outside them because they feel out of control within themselves. And so they don't want options. They don't want possibilities. They've wanted to limit themselves so that they don't have to think so much because when they're thinking so much, that it's causing them more distress. But that's not really an answer for somebody. Often it's just another trap because now I don't want certainty or I want certainty. I want truth. But there is no truth, so to speak. There is only our perception of truth. And it's kind of a strange concept and something I go through with people where we start going through, well, what is truth? What is your truth? Because it really is relative to you.
I think that's important to bring up too, Scott, that it's what is relative, you know, what is important to you. And, you know, when you're talking about the thoughts too, it's in a way, We allow ourselves to get really trapped in the negative thinking patterns. And so one of the things I know you were talking about was this notion of this all or nothing thinking.
Mm.
So, you know, an example, when I think of an example of that, you think of somebody who, so they exercise a lot and they go to the gym every day and they're on track. And then all of a sudden they miss a day at the gym, and so now the world's over, and they just go back to kind of being a couch potato.
So it's like, yeah, or, you know, what happens to anybody who's trying to deal with any addiction or habit pattern that's so ingrained when, and that's every one of us has gone through that one. And it's kind of going, okay, how do we learn to flow? How do we learn to be in motion and not get trapped by, yes, it works, no, it doesn't, that there is a right and a wrong to this world. One of the attacks of the politicians on another candidate was in regards to this notion of moral relativism. And from a religious perspective, it's saying that there shouldn't be moral relativism because there's some truth out there. And in some worlds, there is some truth. And in some worlds, there isn't. So the example I might give somebody is I might say, stomp on the floor. Right? I stomped on the floor. Does it feel solid to you? Does that feel solid to you? And the truth is, it's not. It's 99.9% spinning atoms in space. It appears solid. And in all reality, it is solid, but it sort of isn't. It's kind of like your body. Well, every cell in your body is going to be replaced in 7 years. How much of your body is water, Kyle? What is it, 70-some percent?
Mine's 95.
Oh, okay, there you go. And then, you know, what's left is, you know, when you start taking apart bones and, you know, muscle and everything else, even each individual neuron, if you put it in a dish, it's not you anymore. If you get older, are you not you anymore? If you lose an arm, do you cease to exist? Mm-hmm. Are you not full? Are we just our bodies?
Mm-hmm.
And we're more than that. And so the notion of moral relativism, I think, misses the point of connecting to an absolute, a spirit that doesn't change, or, you know, we could talk about God as being something as an absolute that isn't changing, but the message to us of what we do with that message, of God's message or spiritual message or for ourselves, is relative.
Right.
Because it's still a choice.
So I'm going to take the the fundamentalist perspective of Jesus. Is Jesus, you know, your Lord or and Savior?
Okay.
It's like, it's people talk about how, you know, God is this abstract electromagnetic field and this and that, and Christianity and the Muslim tradition / religion and Judaism and all these religions are saying the same thing about love and about God. And it really for a lot of Christians, it comes down to, do you believe Jesus, the person, is God or not? And so for them, it's black and white. It's, is Jesus your Lord or Savior, or is he not? Do you believe that, or do you not believe that?
So it's a wonderful thing. So what's missing for you on that?
I mean, for me, what's missing for that is a connection to, on the deeper feeling level, to actual spirituality. Because for me, the question is, you know, this historical, it's this historical intellectual question without experiential basis, for me personally.
But what's, so, you know, I think the religion is, and I think all the religions are so beautiful and so powerful, but I think it's not about, it's kind of like people get caught in relationships. They get caught in the details, instead of what's behind it and the experience behind it. And sorry to make that jump to a relationship, but in terms of it, it sort of like misses the point, I think, with some religious aspects of how are you creating certainty of that connection to that higher spirit within yourself and around you,
right,
as opposed to getting lost in dogma of it should be this or should be that.
Right.
And it's sort of, again, the same problem with our thinking, which causes so many psychological distresses. It's, where do we find our truth?
Mm-hmm.
That there is no certainty. There is no right or wrong. Yes, we can say certain things are really bad behaviors, right?
Right.
And maybe in some other situation they might be morally justified. So killing somebody is a wrong thing. But if I was had the chance to kill Hitler, damn well I would have, you know? And so does that make me wrong? What's the higher goal here of what we're trying to create? And that is relative to the situation and what we're creating. That doesn't mean that there aren't certain things that don't work. You know, certainly hurting children is never a good thing.
Right.
But
unless it's Hitler.
Well, there you go. So, yeah, if you could have killed Hitler before he became an adult, you know, I mean, would that have been right? Or is you're still killing somebody?
Should Dumbledore have killed Voldemort?
Well, now we're getting somewhere.
But then would Harry have had a purpose in life? Would he have been born?
My head's spinning on that one. Okay, Danielle, save us on this.
Oh my gosh. you know, I was reading here about kind of with these negative thought patterns and stuff, and when you said, you know, if how killing people is wrong, but if I had the opportunity to kill Hitler, you know, in my mind, I kind of think, though, like, you think of somebody like Hitler, if you know, that's the example we want to use. And
God,
what he thought was true for him. And so that's where, you know, when we think about kind of our thoughts, one of the things that I think is important to ask ourselves, like, is this thought, is it real? Is it true?
Right. I mean, it was true for him. He, I'm sure, was acting with great conviction to make the world in his vision, to make it a better place, even if it's so twisted and demented in how he's doing it.
Hey, right.
You know, I mean, every evil villain in the world, right? Are they, you know, even if it's a power-hungry whatever, they're still doing it for a reason that they're morally justifying in their head.
Right. So, which is called rationalization.
Yeah. It, absolutely. And, you know, how do we get out of that? By the way, you're listening to Mental Health Matters, KRUU 100.1 on your FM dial. Shows are archived. And come listen to some. Give us an email. Check us out. And if you have any questions or thoughts, please connect with us. Today we're talking about...
What are we talking about?
How would you describe it, Danielle?
Black and white thinking.
We're talking a lot about this notion of, you know, kind of thought patterns and all or nothing thinking and kind of where this can lead the thought to go. You know, recently we were just kind of talking about Hitler.
God, I love how we keep bringing Hitler up.
I've got this article pulled up right now. It's Beyond the Borderline Personality.
Ooh.
You know, when we think of kind of the thought patterns, we think of, you know, all or nothing thinking. So basically, or that can be referred to as black and white thinking. So always thinking, which is more overgeneralizing. There's focusing on the negatives, ignoring the positives, thinking with your feelings, so then you start believing the negative feelings without any evidence, guilt beating or thinking in words like should or must or ought to, labeling, attaching negative labels to yourself and others, trying to predict the future in a negative way.
Ooh, I know. I talked to somebody about that the other day where... the man kept saying that the woman kept expecting him to read his mind and to be able to know the truth.
Right.
You know?
Very typical of high schoolers.
But it's true of personality disorders. And again, like any of this, this is just food for thought for yourself to go, well, what works for me and how does that really work in the world around me?
Mm-hmm.
So continue, Danielle. This is great. I'm sorry.
So another one is mind reading. So believing you know what someone else is thinking.
Yep, which I was just talking about. Yeah.
Yep, and then blaming others for your problems and refusing to admit you have a problem.
You know, we were doing a session about mind. Someone was reading someone's mind, trying to read someone's mind, and then we pointed it out to them that, you know, do you want to be reading the person's mind or do you want this? And then they're like, no, and then they bring it back to rationalizing that now it's okay. It's like okay, so let's say my girlfriend, let's say I'm trying to figure something out with my girlfriend and I'm trying to read her mind and I'm like, well, if she only thought this or if she only thought that, oh, she must have been thinking this in order for this or that. And it's like, well, do I want to be, you know, in her head or trying to be in her head? Is it possible for me to be in her head? No. Do I just ask her? Yes. It's like,
and what if she says something that doesn't, you don't know what she's saying?
And it's like okay, it doesn't really matter what she's thinking. It's what do I want to create? What do I want? How do I want to connect and such? It's not about obsessing. It's getting out of the head and into the body. And it's just not obsessing over what the other person's thinking. And no matter how you want to rationalize, you know, that it's okay to try to think what the other person's thinking, it's almost never going to be helpful. And I black and white thinking, you know, it's never helpful. You know, they say black and white thinking, which is also black and white thinking. You say black and white thinking's never good, you know.
Right.
I guess that's also black and white thinking.
Exactly. So, you know, it really is about finding an avenue that works for you, but working for you means allowing you to connect to others. And so the defense of moral relativism is essentially saying that there is only relativism in this realm that we exist,
mm-hmm.
right? That doesn't mean there isn't spirit or some higher force or some absolute that we can connect to and know for some certainty, but that doesn't mean in a relative world that we exist in this world, there is nothing that is the same and nothing that will be the same. And as I've just said those words, everything around you has changed. Every atom, every cell in your body, everything in this world has just changed in the last 5 seconds since I've made that statement.
Right.
So without losing your mind, spinning out of control and trying to comprehend that. It's kind of like, I can't know everything, but I'm going to do the best I can. I'm going to choose growth. I'm going to choose evolution. I'm going to choose something that's productive for me as well as productive for the world around me that then comes back to me. So if I'm creating something that I expect my partner to be able to read my mind, I guess we're focusing on that one, but I want to go back to some of these other ones, Danielle, so keep that list up, is if I'm expecting that, that expectation itself is what's killing me. That doesn't work for me because nobody can read my mind. And even if I'm communicating, these words I'm saying, you could hear me stumbling all the time, are inaccurate and inappropriate, and I'm missing the words that I'm struggling to say. We're all struggling to say. We're all struggling to want to communicate and connect deeper. And so we could only do as good as we can do. We only have done the best that we've done in our past. What can we create now for our future to create a better world today? So go on, Danielle.
You know, one of the ones that I was, when we talk about kind of like the mind reading, I think similarly, one of the ones that people do a lot, and I think a lot of it is based off of experience, they kind of walk into a situation already thinking that it's going to end in a negative way. I think this is a really huge one for people, especially when people come to therapy, too. I mean, I know people come in because they want things to get better, but, you know, you think of couples that come in, and it's like they come in and they, like, just automatically start putting the blame on the other person, which kind of ties into the other one. A lot of these, I think, tie in together. But just people have this idea based on their experience that every situation is going to turn out the same. And so when you get stuck or you get trapped in that kind of thinking, then you'll never be able to move forward and create something new for yourself so that it doesn't continue to turn out that way.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, I get clients all the time that are living in fear and they're projecting that fear onto the other. And they're coming up with excuses of why this person is this or this person is that. A really difficult example I had in sessions recently was where a man was projecting onto a woman these notions that she was this or she was that, and she had all these addictions or all these difficulties or all this stuff. Or let's just say, hypothetically, I'm thinking my partner is cheating on me or doing this particular issue, has porn addiction or something. And the partner is saying, absolutely not. They're not doing those things, you know? Then you come back to the answer of, well, what's truth? You know, if one person says something and it's like their intuition, their feeling is, that is what's happening. And the other person is going, no, 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 that is not happening. And they're absolutely certain. So maybe one person's lying, or one person is projecting their fears onto the other person. I'm not here to be judge and jury for clients or for anybody. It still comes back to the same old notion that we talk about all the time, Danielle, of, well, what do you do about it? Because there will always be those instances. And maybe the person's in denial about their issue, or maybe they are absolutely certain that it's there, but they don't want to deal with it, or that it's a complete and total BS. It's not there. It's just the other person's fears. Either way, it comes back to that same notion of, well, we're at that impasse. What do we want to both create from this now, regardless of where the other is at? Because if we get trapped in, well, my partner is doing this, if my partner is really having an affair, then obviously there's something wrong with the relationship. And if they don't want to deal with that, I can't force them to change. Or if I'm projecting that my partner is having an affair and they're really not, then I need to deal with my fears and my insecurities that I'm now projecting onto the world.
It's strange, Scott. What is the difference? It's between the two different situations of, you know, with me and my girlfriend, I absolutely there's absolute trust. There's absolute trust, and there's absolute honesty, and I don't even have to think about once at all if she has cheated on me or any question on it. Like I feel comfortable in the fact that I know she would tell me if she did cheat on me. You know, not that she ever would, or I would expect it, or even think of it. And I get the same sense, Danielle, that, you know, you have that similar relationship with your husband, where it's like it's not even a question.
Right.
And what is the difference between, you know, my relationship, you know, back 5 years ago with one of my ex-girlfriends, where it was always a question, and back a question of me cheating on her or this and that. What are the differences between those two relationships?
Well, I think one is the difference between the relationship, but one is the difference of who you are, mm-hmm. that you're willing to see that. But it's also not a big, I mean, you could get stuck in these big things. Oh, is the person really cheating or not cheating?
Right.
Well, what if they're having an emotional affair? What right. if they're just running from themselves?
Right.
And essentially not having a relationship with themselves at this moment.
Right.
I mean, yes, we can know some of the, again, the certainty, the big things sometimes are clear black and whitish kind of things. But what they mean and what they do and what's underneath them and the bigger things.
Right.
I think.
Right. I think that brings up a good point that it's really reflecting back on to yourself and back on to you. Do you feel like you're in a space where you're anxious about the relationship? Because if there's going to be something deeper, if you're worried about your partner cheating on you, then there's something deeper. You're not just worried about your partner cheating on you. You're worried that the relationship is a complete bust and that it's not working out.
And so I come back to the same question. What do I want to create? If something's working, if the partner's cheating or not cheating, regardless, something's not working there for you. And so what are you going to create to make your life better? It's incumbent upon you. Nobody is a victim to anybody else. We're all victims to ourselves. And everybody needs to say, I'm going to be honest with myself and go, I don't want to be a victim to me anymore.
Right.
It's time for me to grow and be strong and be who I need to be. And if this relationship isn't working, then I need to be clear about that and change my dynamics, because the easiest way to change a relationship is change who I am,
right.
which then the person has to respond to me, because
right.
I can't change anybody else, but I could certainly change myself. And as I change me, the other person is.
Scott, as you said that is such it's a fascinating concept to me, because you think of people who, like, they want this control. So we try to control our partner. We try to control the other person. We try to control the people around us, when the reality is, all along, we're in complete control. If we just take control of ourselves, then the other person is going to have to adapt to what we're doing for us.
Absolutely. And as we often say in therapy, and the loveliest analogy of all is, Dorothy, click your heels 3 times, you've already been home. You didn't have to go anywhere. You're already there. And you do have the power. You do have the choice. And you do have the possibility to create your life even better today. This very day, this very moment that you're listening to this, take back yourself again. Thank you, everyone. It was another great show. And be empowered, everybody out there. Make a difference in your world. Make a difference for yourself. And be who you need to be for you today. Know your own certainty and then let it go and get that it's going to change and that it's okay that life changes. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.